SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're discussing what it's like to mourn the death of a child and how can parents address the difficult grieving process. My guests are Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods. She's a licensed clinical psychologist with the Psychological Group of Washington, and Joyal Mulheron. She is founder and executive director of Evermore, a nonprofit that offers support to parents who have lost children. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joyal, talk to me a little bit about what you're hearing from Ms. Davis, because certainly the mystery would compound the already broad and broad level of grief that she's dealing with.
Sure. Well, first, let me just say, Ms. Davis, I'm so sorry for your loss. I know that this is an incredibly difficult time. Parents have many challenges that they face, particularly in the first year. In fact, the first 5 years, just surviving is actually an important lesson for parents to take away, and knowing that you're not alone. And while she may not know the cause of death, knowing that her son is no longer here with her physically, I think it is important for Ms. Davis to think about ways to integrate him into her life, both his absence and presence, whether it's through creating keepsakes, whether it's having his favorite meal at Thanksgiving, whether it's going to see his favorite rock band. There are ways in which to keep the memory of a child alive, which helps a parent cope, than simply move on in the way that society largely expects families to move forward.
Dr. Woods?
I agree. I believe that Ms. Mulheron is absolutely correct. First of all, the idea of moving on is just truly impossible. What she's really talking about is this ambiguous grief, which is what this is termed when there's no answers. And part of the coping mechanisms is finding a meaning either in the loss as well as meaning in life thereafter. And that's very challenging to be able to do when one has no or little answers regarding how one died or what the circumstances were that led to this extremely sad occurrence in her life. And so I would agree the integration of her son in her life would be quite important in order to keep his memory alive.
Well, Ms. Davis, thank you so much for being brave enough to share with us. And certainly, you know, our thoughts are with you as you move through this process. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Elaine, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Elaine. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. Hi, panel. How are you this evening?
Just fine, thanks.
I lost my daughter, Rakia, 6 years ago. She had actually, is still on the Internet, Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 8 News, and the Washington Post did a story on her. She was the individual that went to four different hospitals that was turned down because of the way she looked. She was complaining about chest pain, and they said she was too young at 25 to have chest pains. No blood work was done, no urine was done. One of the hospitals here in Woodbridge, Virginia, called the police on her, told her she had to get off the property. We picked her up. She went to another hospital in Virginia. She went to three different hospitals, actually four. The fourth hospital she went to, she had got to the point where she couldn't stand the pain in her chest and in her stomach. They called the police on her. They put a TDO on my daughter, which is called a temporary detaining order, put her on a psychiatric unit, and said, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. The next day, she woke up, walked down the hallway, and collapsed. They left her there, according to her medical records, 41 minutes. They said, and they wrote on her medical records, she was attention-seeking from staff and family. At that particular time, while she laid there, she had become brain dead. Somebody had to wear for all to come by and fear for a pulse, call the emergency room down, directly downstairs. They came up, did CPR on her 12 different times. They brought her back, took her down to the emergency room. And when we got to the hospital, when we found her, I went room to room. I didn't care who was clothed and who wasn't clothed. I don't care. I didn't care what they were doing. I just pulled curtains back looking for my baby. And when I found her, she was hanging upside down by the feet. they were trying to rush oxygen and blood to her brain mm-hmm. because she had become brain dead.
Let me ask you, Elaine, it's been 6 years. How have you addressed your grief, considering the unique circumstances surrounding the death of your daughter?
You don't. You never get over the grief. Grief is not just grief is a physical pain. Grief is also a spiritual pain. I miss her spirit. I miss her spirit that I know at one time comforted me, her laughter, her presence. These are things that I stopped living at the moment she left. So you never get over grief.
Have you?
If someone keeps telling you to get over it, it's been so long,
mm-hmm.
they don't know what it's like to lose a child. You can't even imagine.
Have you sought any counseling?
I have. If mm-hmm. you don't go to the right person, Carol, that has themselves experienced grief,
mm-hmm.
That's just like talking to someone on the street that does not know what your pain is like if they have not gone through the grief themselves because they can't really relate to you. The doctor that you have there on your panel can understand what I'm about my pain because she's gone through it herself.
Talk to me, Dr. Woods, about that, because I think she makes a really critical point about not just seeking help, but the right kind of help for the specific kind of grief. How do you know that you're seeing the right kind of specialist?
You have to interview who you're seeing. Truly, you have to learn regarding what the professional's background is, what their training has been, as well as what their understanding regarding grief is and what their model and treatment will be to provide this individual. As we talked about earlier, each grieving based upon how an individual perishes is different for each person. And this idea that one size will fit all is not the case. Losing a child is very different than losing a spouse, than losing a sibling, losing a parent. Each of these griefs are different. And so if you have no experience, no research, no background, or even experience, it may be very difficult to be able to treat an individual who have experienced such a loss.
But how do you interview a specialist, a counselor, a psychologist, when your frame of mind may not be whole?
Mm-hmm. It's very important to be able to talk to this professional and ask, what is your background? What training have you had? What research are you relying upon? We are, by law, required to provide scientific, researched therapy services. What is this individual's background to be able to support that they are competent in this type of loss?
Elaine, thank you for sharing with us. I appreciate it. And for the insight that you provided with the passing of your daughter. So again, we appreciate your time. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joyal, talk to me about Evermore. Before you came into the studio, I was looking at the website, and considering the material and the focus, I must say that the website not only is well done, but the information that you provide on this website is fascinating. Talk to me about it.
So the callers who've called in tonight, I think there's sort of some salient issues, and one of them is their secondary victimization that happens at the institutional level. So whether or not it's the morgue not allowing a parent to see the body, or it's a hospital who has already pulled together professionals in such a way that as, you know, Bruce walks in the door, he knows what's coming. There are a lot of other institutional partners at the community level, for example, who really are open and I think willing to have better practices in serving these families. And so our focus is launching targeted practices and programs for both parents and practitioners, including the grief therapy community. We are also looking to raise the visibility of the issue generally among the public, but also among key influencers. There's often issues with employment, for example, and parents who lose a child earn less money subsequently. There are many health ramifications that happen for a family. And finally, we haven't been as public about this to this point, but we have just starting to beginning to advocate for change for families. And so working on legislative efforts that will have meaningful outcomes for families. So, for example, child death is not currently a qualifying event for FMLA job protection, meaning that your child dies and your job is not protected. 63% of employers give the average of 3 days of paid leave, and that's what you get. Many of the families will tell you that's not even enough time to provide funeral arrangements.
For any loss of a family member, child Correct. Notwithstanding.
Yeah. Other issues that come up, particularly when you lose a child from 0 to 18, parents may encounter IRS identity theft, where someone else claims your child on their tax returns, and you have to go through a special process at the IRS to prove that your dead child is, in fact, your dead child. And so there are a lot of other ramifications and secondary victimization that happens for families. Evermore is not a direct service group. We are not therapists. We are not a support group. Rather, we are looking at all the other forms of support and what would make a more holistic system of support for a family, because there are many qualified individuals out there to work with families on the direct level.
As I mentioned, when I was looking at the website, and I would encourage anyone who is either moving through this process or who has an interest in perhaps offering support to someone. Again, the website is breathtaking.
Thank you.
And there are stories on the site from parents that have lost children in many ways, many backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, racial backgrounds, religious backgrounds. It's just really, really fascinating reading.
If I could just add, so the program that I think you're referring to is the North Star program.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If you look at research, the researchers will tell you that there is meaning, that most parents seek meaning following the death of a child, and in some cases, benefit finding. And the number one response when parents hear that is there is no meaning and there was no benefit. The second response is, I valued meeting other people like me, and that was really helpful. And so the genesis of the North Star program is to facilitate one-to-one connections where you may not have the money to see a therapist. You may not have the navigational skills to even search or ask questions of a therapist. You may not be able to even get to a support group. And so these individuals who are part of the program are parents who are willing to be connected with other parents, just in order to foster that sense of solidarity and companionship.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Daryl, calling from Maryland, and Melinda, also calling from Maryland. Lines are still open. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if there's something you want to share with us about the loss of a child and the grieving process, we're here. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about mourning the death of a child and how parents can best move through the difficult grieving process. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Melinda, calling from Maryland. Melinda, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Yes, a couple of things. Sorry for the loss of everyone that's gone through grief.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor in particular spoke of stigma behind certain kinds of death. One that often is mistook was the stigma behind someone who had a loss from a person that died that was some kind of criminal or had some kind of suspicious past. and they're not allowed to grieve in the way that they feel that they should because of the stigma behind it. And sometimes the parent feels like they can't grieve because their child might have been a murderer or a pedophile. So that brings a particular kind of grief, just like suicide or any other. My second point, or a resource for people going through grief, is ADEC. It's the Association for Deaf Education and Counseling. And there's a particular study or field called thanatology that actually covers deaf, dying, and bereavement. And the counselors in particular are called thanatologists. I, in particular, studied that field, and my specialty is terminally ill patients and children whose parents died. But they have other people that specialize in parental loss, like stillbirths and different kinds of loss. You know, it could be an adult child. The loss is still the same. You carried this child. You feel that pain, and you will ever, forever feel that pain. It never goes away. It just becomes different. You learn to deal with it and handle it on a different level, but it never goes away. And there's no particular way to grieve. Yes, they have the stages of grief, and that's kind of fluid. You know, you might go through anger at one point, acceptance, and be right back at anger. So every death, every loss is very different to that individual. It's about, you know, being present for that person. That's, you know, what we can do for the person that's grieving or have lost the child, is to be there and just listen to what they need. Because sometimes the words are not there to, you know, comfort them. But just being present and letting them know that you're available.
What was the name of that organization that you mentioned?
ADEC is the acronym, but it's
the Association
for Deaf Education and Counseling.
Deaf Education and Counseling. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Melinda, for sharing with us. I appreciate that. Dr. Woods, and to her point, when you lose a child who may have been involved in malfeasance or some other untoward activity, how do you counsel a parent in that regard?
It is different, as the caller mentioned, actually, in part because, as she mentioned, there is stigma behind it, similarly, that individuals may have judgment regarding the death of the child. And as such, being able to talk to them specifically regarding how, or again, trying to find some ways of coping. And as we mentioned, it's very difficult to be able to find meaning in a death. And so similarly, as we also discussed today, is finding other individuals who have also experienced a similar loss can be quite helpful to that individual. Having a support group of individuals who also can, one, identify, two, empathize, and provide an atmosphere where grieving is welcomed at this space and feeling accepted despite the history of the child that has perished. But I also wanted to bring up the stages of grief that she mentioned, which originated with Kubler-Ross in 1969. And those stages of grief actually was created in order to understand an individual's personal experience with grief when they were sick or ill. And so since, there has been many other grief models that have been introduced that indicates that grief is not a linear process. As the caller mentioned, it's fluid, that you can feel like you're close to acceptance and then revert back to bargaining or feeling in denial. Grief, there is no specific way as to how to do it, and it's an individual process. It is a spiritual process. It's a social process. It's one that affects an individual personally at their core. And so to be able to go through and believe that grief is going to follow a linear path is actually what we've learned does not necessarily work for most individuals. It's actually a process that continues through the duration of a person's life. How severe is the grief changes with time, or we anticipate that it'll change with time. And when it doesn't, when someone becomes fixed, then we have to consider whether or not there's other concerns that we would address and consider it an actual bereavement disorder where the individual would require much more support. But we recognize as professionals that this process is will go through the person's entire lifespan.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Daryl calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Daryl. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to discuss, you know, I just lost my son on May the 5th of 2016 to gun violence in Prince George's County. And it's just been a year today. And basically, you know, as the other caller spoke, every day is a different day. You know, nothing is the same. You know, I've been diagnosed with post-trauma syndrome due to the fact that, you know, when I arrived at the hospital, my son was shot in the head. And he was laying there bandaged up, and the bullet went through his head. So he had two holes in the head, and all I seen was his one eye open. And the pain, the grief that you feel is unexplainable. One end can keep you in peace, and one end can have you in insanity. And I just choose to trust God. Though I'm in pain every day, but I've been up and running. I do my own foundation called Daryl A. Harrison, the second Crime Victim Foundation. And what I do is I go out and I greet and help other parents that may or happen to lose loved ones or children to gun violence. And that's what I do to try to comfort them. There's many programs out there, but mine, I want to be hand-on to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, every day is a different day. I sleep with medication to sleep at night because I have a tendency of picturing my son laying on the table, so I had to use medication to sleep. But I try to stay focused and stay strong so I may help others. Because in Prince George's County, in the metropolitan area, we are losing loved ones to gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm up doing. I'm just fighting. You know, I remember as my son, they announced him dead, I went to touch his hand, and the detective told me I couldn't touch him because he was homicide.
Mm-hmm.
And that just bothered me that I was going to touch my son one more time in the flesh.
Yep.
So I just up and run every day. You know, my website is Daryl A. Harrison, CVS.com.
Mm-hmm.
And all I do is I have a truck that I drive around, and I go to crime scenes, and I try to greet the parents. And I have a brochure that every information or number they're going to need from that day on.
Well, Daryl, I appreciate the work that you're trying to do and not only helping others, but indeed in helping others, it may help your healing process. So I appreciate you reaching out to us. And certainly one could argue that even with the loss of your son, it will help you to put others in a better position if they're going through this. So, again, thank you so much. I appreciate that. In the last few moments that I have, one of the things that we've not discussed, and it just occurred to me, and this is even more heartbreaking, and I'd like you to talk about this briefly, Dr. Woods, is that Todd Heap, the former Baltimore Raven, accidentally killed his own daughter, 3-year-old. He struck her with a truck. In all of the discussions that we've had tonight, we've not talked about the accidental death of a child at the hands of a parent, another form of grieving. How best can a parent deal with something like that? Because these things happen.
They do happen, unfortunately. And one of the things that I would want to highlight is that a professional would really want to talk to that individual regarding feelings of guilt, feelings of shame that they may have, and feelings that they've created or the ownership regarding the life that they currently have and the grief that they currently have, and feeling extraordinary blame, self-blame, and what that does for their self-esteem and self-image and self-concept. I would really want to start there with that individual and being able to really talk about forgiveness and whether that's even a possibility or a thought that they would believe could be actualized from the work.
Joy, I'll let you have the last word.
I'll say that I have yet to meet a parent who doesn't feel profound guilt and feels like they failed. I had a mother call me recently who was in her 60s who lost her son to brain cancer 2 years ago, and he was being treated at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and she said, I should have done better. I should have known earlier, and he should have had even better care. And so regardless of how a child dies, I think the parent at the end of the day feels personally responsible.
I want to thank both of you for coming in and talking about this very, very delicate and difficult topic. And certainly, even as the years, you know, pass, you know, I still understand, Joyelle, that it's a day-by-day process.
Correct.
And your work, you know, Dr. Woods, is certainly heroic, and I hope that you continue to provide some relief and perhaps care, you know, for the folks who are going through this. So Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods and Joyelle Mulheron, thank you again so much. And for those of you who are interested in finding out more about Evermore or indeed contacting Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods, I'll make sure that I post their information on WHUR.com. It'll be on the website a little bit after 8:30. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, May 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or at DailyDrumWHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 142.